the season has like been here for, seems like forever, and it's finally starting to cool off, so.
Oh wow, so you guys getting just like sideways rain every day?
In a lot of flash flooding right now, but yeah.
Oh gosh, goodness.
But at least we have rain, so.
That's true. A lot of people don't have rain, they have fire. Sandy, how you doing out there in Florida?
I could figure out how to unmute. I could respond. Good, good. I'm actually not in Florida at the moment. I don't know.
Oh, you're not. Okay. What, are you in a secret location you can't reveal? Or
yeah. Happen to be in Brookings right now, and I know sometimes there was somebody on from Brookings. There's a small station here.
Brookings, South Dakota?
Checking out. No, Oregon.
Oh, Oregon. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, yeah.
Stephanie, I'm seeing people want to wait. I don't know if I can let people in or not.
Oh, okay. I've been able to catch up with not everyone trying to join so far.
CDs, I just haven't had time to.
Oh, okay, that's fine.
I gotta go.
Okay, bye, Scott.
Yeah. Okay, maybe why don't we? Should we plan on starting officially at 3:05? How does that sound?
Okay, 3:05 is it.
Okay,
that's good.
Just kind of seeing all who's here. It looks like we have too many people to go around and say hi today, I think. So I'm just kind of acknowledging people as they come in here. Matt Murphy's here from Maine. How you doing, Matt? Cool as a cucumber over there.
We had our first rainy day in weeks, so it was pretty good.
Oh, okay. So you're not getting the rain.
Stephanie, I'm letting people in. Can you check and see if that's working? Because I don't know if I really have the power to do that.
Oh, okay. Let's see here. So far, it looks like, yeah, they're coming in. I don't see anyone in the wings.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Great. Okay.
Got a great group today. Grant Parks, hello. Where are you calling from?
I'm coming in from Chico, California.
Chico, okay.
It seems like you have more hair than last time I saw you. Is that right?
It's probably just down this time. Oh.
And we have a S. Augustine.
That's me, Sybil, from WRT.
Sybil, hi.
WRT in Madison, Wisconsin.
Oh, in Madison? Okay, great.
Yep.
Got two Wisconsin representing here so far. And we have someone with a little friend there.
Yes, I'm Helen Vixens with WPFW. I'm with Sophie's Parlor, the oldest continuous women's radio program on the planet.
Oh, that's exciting. Well, it's good to have you.
Thank you.
Michael White, I just sent you an email. I just got online now. I've been traveling. So I don't know if you want to check that.
I shall do that.
And we have a Nando. Is that like Lando?
Good afternoon. I'm in New York with Jim.
Okay.
It's 4:00 here. And I heard it's 3:05. Yes, I'm with WBAI. My name is Nando. It's short for Hernando, which is H-E-R-N-A-N-D-O, so Nando is easier.
Hernando, great. Okay, I like how that sounds. Good to have you.
Thank you.
And we're closing up on 3:05, so who else? I see we have a Mike Little, we have a Marcus here, Indra, we have Val and Alan, Jesse, Otis is here. Morris is here. Patrick is here.
Thanks for joining us, Otis.
And did I get Mike? There's a Mike here, too. I think that's everybody.
Okay, it's 3:05. Should we start?
Okay. I will push the record button here, and I'll turn it over to you, Ursula.
Okie doke.
Recording in progress.
Okay, well, welcome, everybody. It's really great to see you or to see that you're here. And I'm Ursula Rudenberg, network manager, and I just arrived in Minnesota, hence the fish behind me. So thank you all for joining us, and this is an exciting presentation for us to record and to hear from you guys. This was actually a suggestion made by Jim Dingman, who is here kind of co-hosting this particular meeting. And Jim is from the WBAI New York community, and he really wanted to hear some of the input from the affiliate network about what is working with music programming. And I'll let Jim speak for himself beyond that. So I'm going to pass it. We have some really great presenters. We have 10, possibly 11 presenters today. And so we're going to kind of keep moving along. We do, as far as comments and questions, I think I don't want to give a hard no on that. I'm just, I do want, you know, all of you to feel free that you can be part of this conversation. I would say, you know, think about how much you might derail somebody's presentation with a question or comment. And if you think it's going to derail things, then wait until after the presentations, because we do want your discussion. But we have to be careful not to derail things for the sake of time. So having said all that, I'm excited to hear what you guys have to say. Thank you to everybody who has agreed to make a presentation. We really appreciate having you here. And I'm going to throw it over to Jim for a minute to introduce himself, because this is his first time at being at a round table. And I'm excited to have him meet the really, I always say, you know, in my job, I get to work with the best people in America, and that I'm happy that he can meet some of you. So, Jim, you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, it is great to be here, and it's really terrific to hear from all the different folks around the country as to how they do music shows, what they think their best practices are, what they've learned over the years, how they can best raise money for their stations. I come from the station in New York, WBI Radio. I'm a director on the Pacifica National Board, and this initiative is partly a initiative from the Strategic Planning Committee of the National Board and also the Programming Committee of the National Board. Our concern with Pacifica is to essentially learn from everybody and have us all learn from each other. We've been doing initiatives like this in terms of news programming for the past couple of months. It's great to see all you guys here. Be great to have you participate, because I know we're going to learn a lot. We have some folks here from New York. Nando does a terrific Latin music show. And Ken is here. Ken does an ecological show. I guess we're going to talk about ecology and music a little bit. But I really want to shut up and listen to you guys talk and learn from you. And that's really what we're here to do. I should note that we're going to continue these kind of debates and discussions and brainstorming. I set a time for the 23rd. I'm sure Ursula will want to also do something in exploitation of all this. And we really want to learn from everybody how they're doing public affairs shows, Spanish language shows, art shows, music shows, news shows, etc., and sort of figure out how we can all, you know, get our shit together and do a better job in terms of reaching out to people around the country. And I'm going to sit here and learn a lot from you guys. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Thank you, Jim. And we'll hear from you later as you see fit. We're going to kind of break protocol today. Usually we have everybody introduce themselves, but because of the number of people involved, we don't. We just ask you that if you speak up at some point, and we hope you do in some form or another, for you just to give your name, your station, and your location. Just looking at who's here, I promise you the whole country is pretty much represented in terms of the West Coast, Midwest, and the East Coast, South, and North. So just tell us who you are when you start. We've asked the presenters to give their presentation for about 10 minutes, and then I'll let you decide. I'm talking to you presenters now, whether you want to make time for questions or want any feedback, and then we'll just move on to the next. So the first person is Samantha Vall, who is the program director at WMNF Tampa. She goes first because she has a scheduling conflict, and so we wanted to make sure she got in. And I'm going to ask you guys to, you know, just give whatever in background is appropriate for people to understand where you're coming from. I didn't have people send in bios. Michael sent me his bio, but nobody else did. So if you can just very briefly say what you're, you know, who you are and what, where you're coming from.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Ursula, and everyone. This is my first time being in this meeting and this roundtable myself, so it's really exciting to be here and just meet all of you and also learn from all of you, too. So thanks. I'm going to attempt to share my screen. Let's see if I can do that. Can everyone see my screen?
Yep. Yes, ma'am.
Awesome. All right. Already a success. Great. Cool. Well, yeah. So like, Ursula was saying, my name is Samantha Ball. I am from WMNF in Tampa, Florida. And I'm just going to talk a little bit about kind of these like major programming changes, or at least major for us, that we've done recently and kind of the results of that, as well as, if we have time, maybe a little bit about, some of the underwriting that we do with community partners around our local community. So.
Bye bye. Have a good one. Talk to you later.
Oh, just a reminder to mute if you are not talking.
All right. Let's see here. So first, a little bit about MNF. So we are right in the Tampa Bay area. You can see from our map that we cover multiple counties, but specifically we are, our listeners are mainly in Pinellas and Hillsborough. But yeah, we get about 100,000 listeners on a weekly basis. The majority of our listeners are college graduates, leaning a little bit male at the moment, leaning left politically, and I'll get to age later. But also something that's really cool and why we do underwriting at our station is because we find that a lot of our listeners trust us. And since we are a community radio station, our listeners want to support local businesses and local nonprofits. So it's kind of like this win-win for everybody. We find when we have underwriting, we can highlight those businesses and then our listeners get to know them and support them. So, but first, the program changes that we went through. So, A little bit about me is I was born and raised here, but I went to WERS in Boston for school, and then I went to WNCS in Vermont for 3 years. And then when the pandemic hit, I moved back home and got involved with WMNF, a nonprofit. So when I came, and this is around February 2021, this is what our current schedule looked like. Like a lot of different public radio stations, block programming is still our schedule. All of our volunteers are once a week, or all of our DJs and hosts are volunteers who come in once a week. And while on one hand, it's really great because that means that every single person from the community can come in, give, their expertise on their music genre and really represent the community. I felt like the way that our schedule was just not as cohesive or maybe built for flow as best as it could have been. For example, at the top, we have a show that goes from, it's a body rock, it's punk, disco, and heavy metal going into then grassroots Americana type of music. So a little bit of a major shift in genres, right? So I thought, I was discussing this with our general manager, and I thought to myself, well, if there's a way we can keep the diversity of sound, but also configure in a way where we can not only maintain listeners for longer listening time for flow, but also try to attract new listeners by letting the schedule be easier to look at, kind of discern where certain shows are, find certain shows easier, maybe that can help. So what we ended up doing was this. So it's a little bit broken up, and it might be a little hard to see, but basically you can tell by the colors that what we try to do was that 6 a.m. to 6 p.m., generally Monday through Friday, besides our news and public affairs block, those shows we said you can still pick out the same, you can still pick out your own music, and you still have that complete freedom, but we gave them a little bit of parameters to work within so that each hour and each DJ had that same consistent mix of music, but it wasn't a complete departure hour to hour or even show to show. And then we also, for the evening specifically, we group them up into different strips. So Monday nights is blues night. Wednesday night is Latin night. Our Fridays are R&B soul groove nights. Just to make it a little bit easier for new listeners to find what genres they can find where, as well as we configured the schedule so that one show next to the other wasn't a complete departure in genre, but they complement each other and that there was flow and hopefully therefore longer listening time. And we found that, you know, and this, the graphics are a little fuzzy, so I apologize, but we found that we did get some interesting numbers back, which we got a little bit of a dip in overall listenership. These are our streaming numbers. And that's just, we know is because of, we made some big changes, and sometimes with changes you lose some people, but we do believe that we're coming back. And you'll see that before, our main listenership was 55 to 65 plus, and now a year later, our main listenership is 35 to 64. So we're already kind of making a shift in age demographic, as well as you'll see too that there is more longer listening time overall in general. You'll see that, like, for example, I think, yes, Sundays is getting more listeners overall, Friday nights, even Saturday nights too. Even our weekday morning programs at 6 a.m. is getting, like, more listeners, like, starting to come in. So we're seeing some positive stuff happening, even though overall we're still trying to gain back those numbers. We think that we are kind of slowly getting some of those core listeners back, getting used to the changes that we made, as well as attracting some new ones too. And just to include it super quickly, this is another schedule, but this is what we do for our underwriting. So based on day part, it's priced differently, of course. So our most popular daytime is the daytime, like basically 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. when people are going into work or leaving work, tuning in. Or we also find also our Saturday days are doing really well as well. So those are priced the most expensive. However, we do have a discount for nonprofits because we want to give some love back to our community and make sure that it's affordable for a nonprofit since we're a nonprofit. And essentially, for underwriting, I also have some copy examples too of what we give people who want to work with us in the community. We tell them, of course, that you can't do any calls to action. We are a nonprofit. We do have rules, but you can definitely kind of lead your horse to water, where you can say, here's the product, here's what we think is cool about it. If you want to learn more, you can go to this website. No pressure. If you do, great. If you don't, all good. No pressure that way. But yeah, I wanted to keep things short. So that's basically what I have, but I'm definitely open to questions if we have time. I didn't time myself as I planned, so I don't know how much time I've taken up. But thank you.
What do you think, Ursula? Should we allow a couple of questions or?
You're muted, Ursula. You're still mute. You try sign language.
Okay. It's the choice of the presenter.
Okay.
Sure.
Does anyone have any questions?
I do.
I love you. Go ahead.
Oh, hi, I'm Marcus from KURU, Silver City, New Mexico. I was just curious, what is your structure for pricing for how you're charging people for underwriting? It looked like a bolt kind of thing.
Sorry, Marcus. I believe I don't know if something's going on with maybe my volume. I believe you asked about pricing for our underwriting. Like, what do we offer?
Yeah.
I think if I'm actually going back into my presentation here, because I went really quickly on the slide. For our most popular daytime parts, for for-profit businesses, it's $75 per announcement. For nonprofit, it's $40. But then when you go into evenings, it's $50 and $30. And then for overnights, like early morning times and also Sundays, it's $30 and $20.
And that's per announcement?
I believe so. Yes.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've heard that in other, I mean, in large metropolitan areas, that's pretty standard.
Hmm. Yeah, our development director, Laura, she priced everything and has all that good information that she gave me for this presentation. So thanks, Laura.
I see we have a question from Felix and then Sharon.
Hi, all. Thanks so much for that, Samantha. I was just wondering where you got the demographic information. Is that from your stream provider or where is that coming in from?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. We've actually been having a lot of success with Google Analytics, believe it or not. We use that a lot with our streaming numbers. And Google has actually been giving us a lot of great demographic information. Age, gender, and definitely like interests as well, such as, education level. We find that travel and leisure is a huge one, maybe because we are a tourist area. Also reading, we found a lot of book lovers for our listeners too, as well as listening to the radio. But yeah, Google Analytics has been really great.
So that's based on IP from the IP address to Google Analytics. Interesting. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Okay, Sharon.
Hi, thanks. This is really interesting. Thank you so much for your time. I had a question. When you did the change to the more block format, were you able to maintain all of the radio shows that you had on the schedule and get them to sort of adapt their show to fit that block? And I guess the second part of that was, were they able to keep their like show titles, or did it kind of have to become, you know, something new altogether? Thank you.
Absolutely. No, fantastic question. What we found was that we were able to keep the majority of shows on the new schedule, just in a different place. I mean, it was a pretty arduous task. I met with every single volunteer DJ, had a meeting, got their availability and their schedule, and then kind of puzzle piece the whole on-air schedule together to see where I could fit everybody, but also in a cohesive way. Somehow it worked. It happened that what was great is that when we did the block programming, especially for the evenings, it just so happened that we already had these really fantastic shows. They were just super spread out throughout the entire week. So it's like, well, let's put them all in one place so at least listeners, especially new listeners, know where to find them. And if in particular they really like that genre, they can stick around for the whole evening. And that actually really worked out well, in particular with our Latin nights. We had a local Latin restaurant named Red Mesa who, when they heard that we were making this change, decided to underwrite Wednesday Latin nights. And we got actually some great sponsorship through that as well. So it's kind of like a double hitter. And majority of shows were able to keep their name. The only ones that we changed were actually the daytime 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. We're still kind of testing that out. Right now it's just WMNF, and then the DJ is just, hey, I'm Sam on WMNF. But it used to be morning show, It's the Music, noon to 3, and then traffic jam 3 to 6. So we're still testing out whether that was a beneficial move or not. The majority of shows were able to keep their name. Thank you.
Okay, that's weird.
If everyone mutes for a heartbeat and then appropriate amounts, it'll stop doing that. That happens periodically on Zoom.
Oh, okay, good to know.
Okay, I'm gonna move things along if that's okay, because
let's go.
I'm keeping my eye on the clock here, and so
thank
I'm gonna
you very
introduce.
Much.
I'm gonna yes, thank you.
Thank
so
you,
much.
Samantha.
Okay, next we have Sybil Augustine. She's the music director at WORT Madison, Wisconsin, and Sybil, you're on.
All right. Thanks for inviting me to come and be a part of this. And so I've been at WRT a long time, and we've been around a long time. WRT was founded in 1975. Lorenzo Malam, who, you know, most people know, and if you don't, gotta read Sex and Broadcasting, was one of the folks that helped, found the station in 1975, and some of our early staff included David LePage, and they talked about having a organization for community radio, which morphed into, involved into National Federation for Community Broadcasters. So yeah, there's a lot of history here, and I started this job in 1995. We're unusual in that we're a staff cooperative. We have seven staff people. We had six up until the pandemic, but the way that things shook out was so much digital production, we ended up promoting my assistant to be full-time in charge of digital audio production, and well, it's a, you know, hopefully, or it is going to be, you know, moving into managing video and audio production together. And so otherwise we have a news director, we have a listener sponsor development director, we have an events and business underwriting director, we have a volunteer and outreach coordinator. People have these hyphenated titles. And we have an IT director, and then a few part-time people, but we're the ones that mostly manage the station as a collective. We don't have a general manager. We answer to the board of directors, to each other, to the listeners. So it's definitely a very interesting place to work, and things are really different than a lot of places. We have a lot of autonomy within our departments to make decisions. And then, you know, we have to work closely with other staff members on a lot of the really important things that we need to do and on overall vision. We have a programming committee that is, you know, somewhat advisory, and it's been real difficult to, you know, really make their role be more effective. So, again, it mostly comes down to me as the music director and the news director. And about 80% of our stuff, our programming is music versus about 20% news. It's kind of equal between 8 a.m. and 8 p.m., but then it's all music weekdays, but then it's all music between 8 p.m. and 8 p.m. and 8 a.m. weekdays and all through the weekends. So that's a little background on what our station is about, and that there's so much music here, and it's really pretty much in nearly every genre. I mean, we have gospel shows, we have women's shows, we have hip-hop shows, we have oldies pop music, you know, just really, really ranges in so many different ways. So I've got a little presentation too. Let me get that going, and let's see, can I just make this big? Actually, make the presentation, okay. Let's see, I don't know if I need to publish it. I just want to see it, no, I don't want to see all this other stuff on my page, that's all. Okay. Okay. Well, let me give this a try. I'm not sure. Are you all seeing a presentation at all?
Yeah.
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Why can't I see it the way you guys do? Okay. Well, anyway, that's just the cover page there, and, you know, just introduction. I just thought I would, let's see. Okay, here's where I want to start. It doesn't seem to really be in the right order. Okay, so what I've discovered is the host personalities and their on-air demeanor, it's a huge part of why people choose radio. You know, we have so many other ways to listen now, of course, Spotify, Pandora, iTunes, there's so much competition. Why should people listen to radio? Well, it's because you have hosts who are interesting, knowledgeable, passionate, and they're not preachy or like awkward, super awkward and shy, or just going on and on, you know, and don't know when to stop, or incoherent and rambling. You know, they've got a very distinct personality and have a warm, you know, inviting presence, and that, you know, really makes a lot of difference. So what I always look for when I'm, you know, I've hired a lot of people that don't have radio experience. You know, if they have the knowledge and the passion for the music, that's something that they bring, you know, that you can't teach, then you can't buy, you know, they've got it, but you can teach them how to run on equipment and do anything else. It's, you know, that's the focus. And then, you know, they have to have a sense of self-importance, self-insurance, assurance and confidence without appearing to be too egotistical. You know, if you don't have self-confidence and self-assurance, I've had a few of those hosts in the past, it's really hard to build that up. You know, just that you don't jump to judgment on that too quickly, but you can sense that they just don't really feel good about talking in front of people. You know, they just want to play the music. That's really not going to be, for your high profile shows, it's not going to be good, because it's hard to bring people out of that shell if they're just not able to warm up to talking. You know, they've got to be connecting to the person as well as the music for the best, most successful shows. Of course, there's many, many shows, and it's not necessarily an issue for the show in the middle of the night. So, yeah, I mean, you know, some, like, we'd get a comment about somebody says, oh, I love their awkward charm. So, you know, when I say awkward, it's just, you know, it's sort of subjective, but, you know, just needs to not be something where they just don't seem like they know what they're doing. You know, I feel it's disrespectful to the audience to be unprepared, to sound very unsure of yourself, be super self-effacing, but when people do make fun of themselves a little bit and they're not too, you know, egotistical, or they joke about being awkward, that does, you know, charm the audience. So, you know, that's a tricky part, is to cultivate the personalities, you know, but when you continue to, talk to them about the music and remind them to just think about what they're sharing with the listener, that really helps to take that away. I know I'm missing something here, because I just, you know, I thought I would just, you know, off the wall do something I never did, which is make this, these sheets. So let's see. No, I think I've got the right thing. Sorry. So for us, it was important to see all of our shows in a genre or a programming strip as a whole. I haven't brought up the schedule, but we have classical music 5 to 8 Monday through Friday. We have folk and international, which includes country, bluegrass specialty shows from 9 to noon Monday through Friday. And then we have different types of jazz from 2 to 5 Monday through Thursday. And Friday's always been an anomaly where it's more of a variety show. There's a lot of rock, and that can include folk, singer, songwriter, just about any genre, because a lot of times people would come into the studio and do live performances, or, you know, whether it's live or on the phone, do interviews, because of all the stuff going on over the weekend. So, so that show is more eclectic by that nature. And then, it's generally mostly rock after 8 p.m., but there's different flavors every night. And one of the things I did when I came here is to try to look at it and arrange it to where there was a flow to keep people listening, because in my experience, people kind of have a routine. Most people, the majority of people have a routine, you know, they do such and such in the morning, and that's just the time that they go to work, or, you know, get to work at home. then, you know, they have lunch at a certain time and they do such and such in the afternoons, and then that's how their routine goes. But then at night, you have a lot of choices. Sometimes people have nights at home. Sometimes they've got a volunteer work. They're out doing something. They're meeting. They're having company. They go out. So at night, I would try to – so we try – we have programming that keeps people tuned in at the same time every day across the board. And at night, it's more like holding on to that audience. So we have an electronic show that goes into electronic and industrial music, and then it's followed by a metal show. So that leads up to the heavy music. And we have indie rock on Tuesdays, and there's several shows like that that flow together. And then on Wednesdays, we have more of, there's classic rock, and there used to be a Grateful Dead show in there. There's a lot of live recorded music in there. And then on Thursdays, we call it Thursday Night Strange. It's when my show is on, and it's indie rock. It's archival rock. It's also eclectic freeform music of all different kinds, and just, it's just wild, strange, comedic, provocative. And that follows through on the other shows after that. So, and then our Saturdays are very successful. They are go from soul to jazz, and then there's international music a lot, reggae, African, and Latin music that flows through. And then a couple of more flagship shows, oldies and blues types of shows. So, you know, there's across this programming strips and the shows that are in the same genres, you want to have a variety, but a little bit of cohesion. If you have a super far out avant-garde show among the jazz shows, it kind of affects the host in the other genre. So it's good. I found that it's good to be consistent with that. And now let's get into the monetizing. I think that is. I'm ready to go there. Let's see. So some of the things about music programming, well, it's really hard with all the competition going on. Syndicated programming is mostly free, so it's hard to monetize, like, oh, we're gonna, you know, this is such a great show, we should sell it and make money. Well, that's difficult in my experience. And then if you try to have podcasts, it's really expensive to license, you don't want to do that. Our local underwriters, and we only accept local underwriters and local business sponsors, and you know, you have to work with them to find their favorite shows, and you know, to try to sell them on the programming that would fit with their audience. Some of the other ways, these are the tools that we have to monetize programming. Pledge drives, of course, and a few things that that enhance it for us is we've really cut back on all kinds of different premiums, and people do like to pledge to get tickets. And then people started, when social media started to get big, people were like, oh, I want to do a Facebook fundraiser. But there are issues with that in the sense that it's easier to spread the word, and you can make goals and so on with it. But it's difficult for the station. Just bear in mind that you're not going to get the money right away. They might take some of the money out if you do a Facebook or third party fundraiser. And then you don't have the contact info to, thank that the donors donated that way, and, you know, get them into your database and try to solicit them for the future. So we're looking at ways to try to allow people to do the Facebook fundraisers because they're easy and fun, and you can, you know, walk into the studio with a bunch of money in your hand, but also, you know, we want to have those under benefits. We have had special events where our hosts are doing, talk about their history and their shows, and if they're musicians, they can perform. So we've done a few of those. We've had remotes like for World Radio Day during a popular show, and everybody came down because they wanted to see that host, and they donated during that event. So and also the sponsor was a bar and gave us a portion of the proceeds. So that was a way to make money. We have a sound system, a PA, and we hire that out, and you can hire out a DJ, or you can just rent the PA, but that brings in some money. And then, grants, it's been a little tough, but we've got money here and there sometimes. to archive programming or to digitize music for more storage and for studio equipment and upgrades for our live audio and for video sessions. And then finally, let's see. You can have live music in the studio, and you could invite major donors and sponsors and potential funders to sit with you in the studio audience. And then we put together an archive of that live and studio music or stuff we recorded from remote broadcasts, things that nobody else has. And we're looking at having a section on our website that's only accessible via password, so that, you know, when you have a membership, when you make donation, then you're able to get that as an extra benefit and get to the music vault of rare recordings. And we've been doing some working with partners at live concert events, especially since we're not doing live music in studio. Wart is still actually closed to the public, and DJs are not allowed to have live guests or news programming. Nobody is. All the interviews are live or on the phone or via Zoom. You have to be a volunteer to come into the station. And we're probably the only other place besides hospitals in Madison that requires masks at all times. So that's making that tough. But anyway, we're doing all the live stuff outside of the station. So we work with partners at events. We invite to try to set up where we can say, hey, can we, you know, that we're sponsoring. And if we're sponsoring, we can say, hey, can we get this band to do a meet and greet with our major donors, you know, before or after the show? And yeah, we've talked about genre-based fundraising in terms of just fundraising around, you know, certain genre at a time. Maybe, you know, maybe do it like a regular pledge drive for a week or have some other approach. Doing more live remotes or special programming during our fund drives, because, you know, my conclusion is that the pledge drives have been the best way to raise the most money with our music shows. It raises at least 80% of our budget and pretty much keeps the station going. So I think that's all I have. Is that what's helpful? Anybody got any questions?
Yeah, thank you, Sybil. Jim, you had two questions. Do you want to address them to Sybil?
Excuse me, Sybil gave a really fantastic overview of the different aspects of monetization, which I really found very useful to listen to. And I just wanted to ask her, like, what, you know, you obviously have an evolution of these music shows in relationship to their communities. And you have all these different best practices, if you will. You know, talked about doing gigs with local bars, etc. And then you get to a pledge drive. So I'm wondering, just if you could share with us, you know, how's that accumulation, like, help you raise the money during the pledge drive? I mean, does it, you know, because it's just not the show itself being on there, but it's all this build up with all the different things they're doing. And I'm just wondering what your thoughts are about that.
Yes, it does help. what more can I say? Well, I really try to get the on-air hosts themselves out there, but also have some staff people there, because what happens is people, you know, they want to, I'm sure you all know that they want to put the face to the name if they can, and they'll recognize your voice, you know, and so on. And, but they want to come up and talk to you, and you've got to be there to, you know, to welcome them and say, well, hello, you know, sure. And just listen to what it is they have to say. And, you know, I, when I go to these things, I don't expect to really have fun. I'm just prepared the whole time for people to just come up and talk to you and go, well, I want to tell you this, or this is really great, or I don't like that. You know, during the pandemic, when it had to be all, remote, and I've had everything forwarded to my phone, so many comments. So many people calling, you know, they love this, they hate that. But anyway, you know, they make that personal connection, and, you know, whether they've already been giving or whether they, you know, have just been a listener or haven't given much or given much thought, it really changes the relationship for them to see you and talk to you in person, you know, and even if they don't get to meet you, but I think it's really important to make that time to have the one-on-ones with individuals and listen to what they have to say, whether, you know, it's a compliment or a more of a criticism. And, you know, it's, we have a great volunteer and outreach director who just came in with a bunch of stuff. So, you know, we have all kinds of things, these little, booklets for volunteers and, you know, lots and lots of the stickers. And, you know, the program guide has got really a lot of detail about what the different programs are because, you know, otherwise you just have a name and it's this huge patchwork of programming. So, you know, they have questions and, you know, that's the best way to connect with them. And trying to think if there was anything besides that we were talking about besides just getting out there with the live remotes and the special events. Just that, you know, people see our name on stuff and they just, you know, just keep it. It's just like a pledge drive message. It's got to be over and over and over to really sink in. And so, you know, get a cool design, you know, have all the information you need in there, but, you know, don't make it, you know, make it easy to read and streamline it. And, you know, just be there for people, be available and accessible.
Yeah, thanks, Sybil. Fantastic.
I hope they answer.
It'd be great if everybody could make the PowerPoints they're doing available to all of us. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I actually can share that, you know, or it's in the recording too, but it was sort of not really great finish, but let me know. All right. Thanks.
Thank you, Sybil. We could do a whole round table just on the literature that WORT produces because it's really, really beautiful. Okay, so I'm going to, thank you, Sybil. Really appreciate it. I'm going to move right on to Mike. Is it Lytle or Little?
Mike Lytle.
Lytle. Okay. Station manager at KKFI, Kansas City, Missouri. Mike, take it away.
Thank you. I'll try to keep this brief because as station manager, I've seen things from a different perspective than what a program director can. My experience at KKFI has been over 20 years. We've been there over 30, and we've been fairly successful for a non-commercial radio station, 100,000 watts. And in the time that I've been there, I've seen us prosper most of the time. The problem is we're aging out, and I wanted to bring that to this discussion in that we have painted ourselves into a corner by having great support during our pledge drives. We have three a year. We do some underwriting. It's been pretty successful. We've got very nice facilities. We're lucky to have that going for us and great equipment. The problem is because we put ourselves into this situation where we have older DJs, all of which are totally volunteers, our listenership is getting older. Our DJs are getting older, and we're not backfilling with younger people. And hearing Samantha talk about how they've got a younger audience and probably younger DJs, I'm very envious in that I've been working for these last 10 years trying to get our people to listen to how do we get younger? Because eventually the gravy train runs out and your listeners, I hate to say it, die off, move away, whatever. And we are totally unprepared for that. At the same time, we're very successful in mining those listeners and being very profitable during our three pledge drives a year. We make over, last I checked, like $70,000 per pledge drive. And it's very driven by the eclectic nature of our shows. Much like these other two stations, we have a very wide range of music and talk. It's like an 80-20 break of music to talk. And it's very different than every station in Kansas City, maybe even in the Midwest. In fact, I'll say, paraphrasing our mission statement, to give the listener something they can't get anywhere else and serve the underserved. And with that mindset, we do attract our share of good listenership. But I bring up the problems we're running into because I wanted to make sure that everyone was aware that if you continue down the road that's successful, sometimes that road ends. Especially if you're not prepared for that road ending. And so that's the dilemma that we're running into. But when it comes down to it, the bottom line I wanted to share with you all that we find successful is trying to make sure that every show that's on the air with KKFI is a quality show in every respect. And if it's not, we work with them to try to make them the best that they can be. And that's really the summation that I can give you, is that when a good show is there, the people will come and they will listen. So that's really all I have to express to you. Any questions?
Looks like Jim has a question.
Yeah, thank you, Mike. I'm just curious, in general, with everybody here, how many folks are actually bringing Gen Z DJs into the mix and training them? I'm just curious about that. I'm just curious how you're approaching that, Mike, because that baby boomer versus Gen Z situation is the big dilemma.
It's interesting, isn't it? I was just going to mention, I'm also the primary trainer at our station. I have been for 20 years, and I've seen this disconnect in, as people come in and start to train and become certified, because we don't have a lot of openings in our schedule on a regular basis, they literally end up leaving before we can get them on the air 80% of the time. And that goes to what I was talking about an older staff, an older on-air list of DJs, because they feel very tied to their time slots.
Mm-hmm.
And it's difficult to bring them out of those time slots, especially when they're successful during the pledge drives. And so it's a catch-22 for us in that we can't really bring in new people very easily. It's literally like pulling teeth, trying to get young people involved in our station. And that's what we're wrestling with right now. But the answer is we train them in a very one-on-one basis, and I'm the primary trainer during that. And it takes typically 6 months. I hope that answers your question.
Uh-huh, but, Mr. Lyle, do you actually have non-air staffers or, long-time staffers? And let me correct myself. I'm losing my question. How much of your staff, the ones who are involved in teaching and training and stuff like that, and also the decisions of the station, how many of them are of those generations themselves or the one right before it?
Next to none of our people are younger, if that answers your question. But we have, just to break it down, we've got close to 100 on-air personalities, all volunteers. We've got 4 staff people that are paid behind the scenes, and the training that we do is not really set up to train any certain age group or generation. It's whoever comes walking in the door, sadly, because whoever shows up, we're so desperate to have bodies that we try to make it work somehow, some way.
Yeah,
and if they're a C-caliber individual on air, we can live with it because we just need that much help. That's the dilemma that we've run into.
I have a problem. I'm over at WUSB. I'm not a non-officer or anything, but I came in on this. But WUSB Stony Brook, New York. And, of course, we have the advantage of having a very large university. And we actually still get a reasonable amount of younger people volunteering for this. One of the problems over the years has been, once they come in, we never utilize them for anything other than air. And so they were all waiting for airships and they eventually move on. But, what we really need are people who are making decisions that way. Fortunately, we have, rules that say that the official program director, music director and business manager have to be students. And that at least forces the issue of having actual students involved, because they end up being in charge. They're not the station manager, but they run the actual affairs of the on-air station. And so that's an automatic, but the thing is, then you have the quality problem, in that, if those people start losing, their, steam, then everything starts to drift and nothing, and the station heads nowhere. And also if they have their grades suddenly drop off and have to pay their attention to that instead of helping making decisions about raising money, having which people are on the air, whether we want to emphasize a certain thing. We do recruiting at the very beginning of each semester. I wish we had more all year, but that's what we get. It's the beginning of the semester when students start to come here. And so we have a number of students on air and some students on staff. I can't say it's worked out great, but it's worked out, which for many stations I know, it's not working out anymore. And
that's what we're worried about. It's getting to that point where we've aged out so much that we start losing our high quality people for whatever reason, and we don't have anybody to backfill, especially younger people.
So well, especially college stations have a way to lessen that. I do not know how to do it for a community station.
Good points.
We have a number of other questions. Mike, can you take a few more questions real briefly? Okay, we had somebody ask for how do you train your DJs and how do you certify them?
Our version is literally homegrown because most of our people can't spend very much time at the station, so everybody does bits and pieces. In fact, I've got 3 or 4 junior trainers who work under me who are all very experienced, so we share the load as far as how we train. Our primary way is to set them up in a production room where the facilities are almost identical to our on-air booth, and then have them literally just practice doing their show in there on a very regular basis. Our target is 6 months normally. And then also have them study our manual. Written test comes at the end of that. And then also watching and observing some of our more experienced people. And in those 3 ways, they typically learn enough to get proficient. Again, it's not the ultimate to me, because if we ran this like a school or university, a classroom or something, we'd have them need to get an A before they were allowed to be on the air. And we've evolved into a situation where just get them to minimal standards to where at least they're functional on the air and we'll live with it because we're so desperate for the on-air help. So that's the dilemma that we're in. But again, that's how we do it.
Okay, and then I there's another question here, which is kind of a Pandora's box, so I'm wondering if you can answer with 1 or 2 sentences before we move on. What is the management structure and the governance structure? Can you paraphrase that very briefly?
You say our governance?
What is the governance and management structure?
Yes, we have a board of directors, all volunteers. We have an active member group that elects the board of directors. We've got 15 different committees, all of which are total volunteers. Again, that it's tough to make that all work with that many moving parts of volunteers. Luckily, we have a volunteer coordinator. And essentially, it's a lot of moving parts that we try to keep organized and working together. But that's how we work.
And Sybil, you want to ask your question real quick? I don't actually understand what you're asking.
I didn't have a question.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I see that Michael White and Felix had their hands raised. I don't know if you want to have them put theirs in the chat for as we go along or ask that out loud.
Try doing it real fast where I'm kind of want to move on, but.
Yeah. Michael White?
Yes.
I have a real quick suggestion, and that is that if you want to build a cadre of younger producers, set aside a time on your schedule, maybe not the most frequently listened to time, and reserve that for younger, newer people and build a cadre and just fill that. So you never know what you're going to get that week. You've got some people you can plug in if you need to, but dedicate some time for your new people and get them motivated to do it. And with that, I'll shut up.
Good thoughts. Thank you.